You are unique. The colour of your eyes, the tone of your skin, even your fingerprints. So it shouldn't surprise you to learn that your brain is also unique. Data reaches the brain via the senses: touch, taste, smell, sight, and sound. But how your brain handles that data can be different from those around you. So what's your unique way of filtering those inputs? Stay tuned, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this special series on brain function. The brain is the control center of the body and it responds to its environment based on how it reads that environment and which sensory input it prefers. So let's hear about one learning style from Betty Fetter, author of the book Being Visual.
Visual thinkers think holistically. When you think of how you process a picture, you process a picture all at once. Where an auditory thinker and a language thinker processes words very sequentially, a visual thinker is used to processing images. 90% of the information that you receive comes to you visually. And so this is a very natural, it's a very intuitive way for our brains to work. It's all of how our body is wired. So a visual thinker, we've got to give them those images to see because it's so intuitive to them. In order to help a visual learner do better in the classroom, information needs to be presented visually. They learn by seeing. They literally remember the visual representation of the information. So if they're listening to lecture, it's not registering. They've got to actually make pictures for that information they're listening to. Your eye processes 36,000 images an hour. But if they get information with the pictures, they're much more engaged in the learning process. When they study, it is so much about using color, drawing pictures, using images, in order for them to help them remember the information visually. Our visual kids need to be involved in the arts. The arts develop, they're just a perfect match for the way these kids think and the way their minds operate. You also want to get them involved in activities that engage them in learning structure and learning organization in detail, but doing it in a way that's really natural to them, appealing to their visual side while developing their organizational skills.
If you have a visual preference, look for things that appeal to your visual side. We joined Dr. Arlene Taylor at St. Helena Hospital to create this special four-part series on brain function. Dr. Taylor is one of the world's leading speakers on this topic, and today we're discussing sensory preferences. Dr. Taylor, we're talking about brain function in this series.
Which I absolutely love.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The brain is fascinating. Now, one way we interact with our world is through our senses. It's how we pick things up and transmit things. So sight, sound, smell, taste, all of these things. How do we interact with each other?
The only way I know of that we connect with anyone is through one of the senses or multiple senses. If you could figure out another way we communicate without using the senses, that would be revolutionary.
We think it's all about speaking and hearing, but there's more to communication than that.
Well, speaking and hearing actually are probably the least of the way in which we communicate.
So what's the most of it?
Well, you know, when we were kids, we talked about, you know, seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling, just like you mentioned. We tend to divide those into three groups now: the visual sensory system, the auditory sensory system, and the kinesthetic sensory system.
Explain kinesthetic for us.
When you do large sample studies and estimate population differences, about 60% of the population are visual. That means that what they take in through their eyes registers most quickly and intensely in the brain. 20% are auditory. I'm clearly auditory, so I'm, you know, a smaller percentage of these grouping estimates. Right. And the other one is kinesthetic, which is what you smell, what you taste, how your muscles feel, how your clothes feel against your body, the temperature in the room, how comfortable are you in what you're sitting on, and so on.
How does a visual brain, I mean, do we have a preference, each of us?
We believe there's a preference. If your brain is normal, and I have to tell you, I don't like that word. Normal just means commonly occurring.
Right, yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean functional or desirable. Nevertheless, if you have a brain that's normal, I would say if you had a brain that's unimpaired, but all of us have a brain that's impaired in some way.
Yes, we do.
But if you have a normal brain and you are subjected to all types of sensory data, your brain is able to process those. Mm-hmm. There will be one type that registers in your brain most quickly and intensely. So if we say you have a visual sensory preference, what comes in through your eyes gets your attention fastest. If you have an auditory preference, what comes in through sound gets your attention fastest. And if you're kinesthetic, well, there's a lot of things that get your attention quickly, and certainly odors, tastes, especially how your clothes feel against your skin. Often you'll find old children, their visual mother will dress them, and they'll cry, and they keep trying to take their clothes off. And they may be kinesthetic, and the feel of that fabric against their skin is not pleasant for them.
Mm. So for an auditory person, what can be unpleasant to them?
What can be unpleasant to an auditory? It depends on the auditory, because even though you have a sensory preference, within that, every brain is different. So some auditories love to eat food that crunches in their mouth. They like chewing nuts and chips and toast. And some auditories do not like that sound. They don't like the sound of chips crunching in their mouth. Some auditories like to wear things that make sounds. Mm-hmm. When I was a girl growing up in Canada and ice skating, I had bells on my ice skates. I loved to hear those little bells as I would be skating. Other skaters wanted absolutely no sound on their ice skates. So some people like things hanging on their clothes that make sounds. I prefer no sounds in my clothing. Somebody, a family member, gave me a pair of those nylon pull-on pants for cold weather, but every time I took a step, they swished.
Yes,
I was walking along with my legs as far apart as I possibly could because I hated the swish sound.
You obviously grew out of the bells and the whistles.
Oh, yeah, sort of. Although I do have some mobiles at home with bells on them. It's just I don't want them anymore on my clothes or my shoes.
Oh, okay. I'm telling you your every move.
And I like birds that talk.
Now, if we are communicating, do we communicate through our preference? So here I am, a visual, communicating with you, an auditory. Could we miss the communication between each other?
That would be what I call a duh. Yes, because unless we make a different choice, we automatically want to communicate in our preference. So I want to communicate through sound, and I know you're sitting there and you look wonderful and I am seeing you, but my brain is much more tuned into what you're saying, the sound of your voice, the inflections, and you, conversely, are probably much more tuned into the expressions on my face, any movements that I make that might catch your eye, and so on and so forth. So, knowing you're visual, then I need to be sure to look at you, because visuals often want to be looked at. Whereas as an auditory, I could close my eyes and talk to you for an hour, and I don't have to see you.
What about if one of us was kinesthetic? What would be the way that we would most communicate the best and be really open to hear things?
Well, kinesthetics need to be comfortable because they're so tuned into the way their bodies feel. Mm-hmm. And if they're comfortable and if they feel safe, they can certainly use their visual and auditory senses. But if they're uncomfortable, they may miss much of what comes to them visually and auditorily because they're squirming and things don't feel right and it smells really awful here.
And they're distracted.
They're very distracted by their sensory preference.
So make sure they're comfortable before you start to share something that might be important.
And ask them, do you need some water to drink? What could I do to make you more comfortable? That's their language.
Have you worked out yet what your sensory preference is? Well, we still have lots to cover with Dr. Taylor. Coming up, we're creating a delicious lunch and getting into some exercise. All this and much more ahead. Stay tuned.
I love learning about my ancestors. It makes me feel like I have a place in history. And I always tell my family, the more you learn about your past, the more you understand the present. But the past doesn't have all the answers, especially about the future. There's so much uncertainty and so much fear in the world today. Which is why I'm so happy that I found something that brings together my past, my present, and my future. I know that no matter what happens, there is a plan. And this gives me hope.
Welcome back. Here I am in the kitchen with Justin and ready for today's recipe. I love this part of the show and hopefully you do too. So yes. Justin, what have you got on the menu for us?
Well, today I'm going to share with you one of the things that I like to make sometimes. It's a sandwich, but it has some really delicious ingredients in it. I call it Justin's Soindwich.
Justin's Soindwich.
Soindwich.
Well,
yes.
Well, well. What would Lord Sandwich say about that?
He would probably be rolling over in his grave.
Well, there you go.
Okay. So in my Soindwich, it's just a couple of pieces of bread, two slices of firm tofu, some romaine lettuce, some vegenaise, some mustard if you want it, half an avocado sliced, and a slice of onion.
Ooh, an onion. Your bachelor habits, dear
yes.
me.
Dear raw me. Onion.
Raw onion. Mm. Okay.
So this is, I mean, I'm assuming everybody out there knows how to make a sandwich. The thing about this sandwich is instead of doing some sort of meat or some sort of cheese or something, we're going to use a couple slices of tofu. Now, people say, oh, tofu. You know what tofu is? It's
that?
Just like one of your high-class... subtly flavored soft cheeses.
That's the way to think of it. I like it.
That's, you know, you put it in a sandwich. You put it in a sandwich, and it's just this luxurious mouthfeel. It has this. It lends this texture to the sandwich that's just really delicious.
Well, I'm looking forward to trying it.
So let's get started.
So what order do we do this in?
Well, usually I like to take the bread.
Yeah.
And then put things onto the bread. I'm going to demonstrate that.
Oh,
now.
Really? So you do an open sandwich, rather than a closed sandwich.
No, I'm going to make a closed sandwich.
Closed sandwich, okay.
But I generally tend to like to assemble it before I, close it.
Right.
So use as much or a little.
So you use vegenaise instead of as a bread spread.
I do. I Great. Actually. Before I discovered vegenaise, I used, mayonnaise and whatnot.
Yeah.
When I discovered vegenaise, I actually like it better. I mean,
wow.
even
Great.
If it, I'd probably use it even if it wasn't so much better than mayonnaise.
You know, there are some parts of the world that don't get vegenaise. So I'm going to put a soy mayonnaise recipe on this week on Thursday night.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And
That's
then you
great.
Can tell us which you prefer.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to take these lovely slices of tofu here and lay them lovingly.
Just,
I'm going to lay them lovingly.
Lovingly.
Yes.
Okay, that's Justin laying it on lovingly.
That's right. Lay it
wow.
lovingly on.
This is what I love to lay on. Avocado.
Throw away the bread, throw away the tofu. Just make your sandwich entirely out of avocado.
Avocado, yes.
I would be just fine with that. Okay. And a little bit of...
Just a little bit.
Just a little onion.
A little onion.
And I actually like a lot of lettuce on my sandwich. You know,
it adds
sometimes
the moisture,
I exactly,
it?
Yeah. Sometimes I stack it an inch high, just lettuce.
Really?
I really like lettuce.
Don't dislocate your jaw that way.
Well, I've got kind of a big mouth. People have told me that before.
Well, you come from Texas.
Yeah, well. So what I do is I just stack them together like this, rip them in half, and then...
Four layers. Whoa.
Done and done.
That looks good enough for a game.
That, Dr. Nerida, is a sandwich.
That is a soindwich.
That is a soindwich. Justin's soindwich.
Justin's soindwich. Well, that's quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do we attack it?
Well, I usually like to put it in my mouth and then chew.
Really?
Yeah. But I suppose...
I might just try to cut it.
Let's see if
Let's see
works.
If we can, hey?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Are we ready?
Little bite size.
Yeah. I might give you that that piece there.
Okay. The one with onion in it?
That's the one.
Mm. Ding.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheese. Tofu.
Tofu.
Mmm.
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 Isn't that a great sandwich?
That is a great sandwich.
I fear I've bitten off more than I can chew.
I'm going to keep that recipe. Well, thank you so much. That is so delicious.
The battle of the bulge happens for many of us as we try to shed extra pounds. One way to win is to adopt a total vegetarian or vegan diet. A recent Adventist health study found that the more closely a person consumed a total vegetarian diet, the closer they were to their ideal weight. So each step you take towards a total vegetarian diet will give you an advantage in the battle. A total vegetarian diet is another ageless advantage.
You may be wondering how kids with a kinesthetic preference absorb information best. Well, here are some tips from About.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Gallagher for About.com, and today I'll share with you some tips for kinesthetic learners.
Each of us has a preferred learning style. We learn best either by seeing, hearing, or experiencing things. Kinesthetic learners learn best by doing or experiencing things. They tend to be good with their hands and enjoy active learning. Research shows that people perform better on tests if they adapt their study habits to suit their learning style. For kinesthetic learners, that might involve group discussions or even just studying with others in a group. Book clubs, for example, are well suited to kinesthetic learners. Kinesthetic learners also enjoy learning activities that they can get physically involved in, such as play acting or role playing. Performing science projects or really any type of activity that involves doing something firsthand is good for kinesthetic learners. Note-taking is not the best study tool for kinesthetic learners, and when they do have to sit at a desk to read or take notes, it's best for them to study in short blocks and take frequent breaks. Flashcards are a wonderful tool for kinesthetic learners because they turn the act of memorizing into a memory game. And with flashcards, you can use them by yourself or with a partner. The interactive experience of using flashcards with a partner appeals to these types of learners. Finally, kinesthetic learners learn by using memory or word association games to reinforce information, taking field trips and visiting museums, and slideshows or, for younger kids, puppet shows.
Let's learn more about sensory preferences from Dr. Taylor.
Dr. Taylor, we're talking about sensory preferences, but when we meet someone, how do we start to pick up which preference they have? What are the cues that we give out about our personal preference, sensory preference?
You know, we give out cues all the time, usually in body language, but sometimes in words. And if you are beginning to understand this and you pay attention, you can often pick up, especially in an older person, not necessarily a child, but we'll talk about that, but in an older person, for example, if they say, oh, I see what you mean, that looks really clear to me. Okay, they're probably visual. Mm. If they say, oh, I hear what you're saying, they're probably auditory. If they say, ooh, I don't seem to have a handle on that yet, you know, that gut feeling kind of thing, they're more likely to be kinesthetic. And if you reply in kind, their brain says, oh, this person gets me. They're speaking the same language. And they also tend to feel more comfortable. So if you don't make the conscious choice, I'll be speaking to people just, you know, auditorially. And then when I realize, oh, they're not auditory, I'll say, you know, let me rephrase that and see if I can create a picture for you that your brain can see. Or let me put that in a different way. And try and have your brain get a handle on the concept. Any little thing like that that speaks their language will often make the brain feel more comfortable. And after all, communication is enhanced when both brains are relatively comfortable.
So does that mean birds of a feather flock together in terms of sensory preferences? Do we tend to befriend somebody who will feel more comfortable and kick along together if we're the same sensory perception?
You know, that's an interesting question, but we don't think so. We think where that plays out is you return to environments in which your sensory preference is honored and you feel comfortable. But you usually pick your best friends from your brain lead, the part of the brain that uses the energy most efficiently, not in sensory preference.
Okay. Do we miss, if we're very strongly visual or auditory kinesthetic, do we miss a lot of cues and things that are happening in our environment? Do we kind of miss out on half the world?
I think we miss two-thirds of it or more, because we will be tuned into picking up what registers most quickly in our brain. Having said that, part of really living in the moment is being aware. And the more aware we are, the more we're able to pick up information. Although the brain will give it to us intuitively if it's picking up things in the environment that it thinks we've totally missed and that we need to pay attention to.
Now, you mentioned children. Are children born with a sensory perception? Do they develop it? Where does it sit there?
My brain's opinion, from the studies I'm aware of, and that's all I have is my brain's opinion, is that when you come out the chute, you have a sensory preference. However, that birth to age five is the fastest learning time that we'll ever experience. And so those little brains are using all the senses all the time. But you can start watching for how they interact with things, how they interact with you, what they gravitate toward. You can usually pick up a sensory preference, especially if it's kinesthetic. Sometimes a brain scan during pregnancy will show the baby sucking a thumb or finger. And when those children had been followed, they turned out to be kinesthetic.
Is that right? Oh, I love watching thumb sucking in utero. And how might you treat your children in terms of their sensory preference? What might you want to bear in mind when you're dealing with them?
Watch them. If you think they're kinesthetic, they need to be comfortable. They may be dragging their blankie around with them till they're 47. Let them do that. If they are visual, make sure that the surroundings are pleasant. There's color. Things are neat. That's important to a visual. If they're auditory, talk to them. Let them listen to music. Be very careful of the tone of your voice, because they will pick that up very quickly, the nuances.
Now, tell us, in terms of marriage, how important is it to understand your mate?
I think it's critically important, and that's the reason I've spent years developing a sensory preference assessment. because we relate to each other through the senses, and we primarily will relate through our preference unless we make a different choice. Now, if you and I were both visual and we were partnered, not a problem. Mm-hmm. What registers in each of our brains is the same. If I'm auditory and you're visual, and once we sign on the dotted line, I will automatically become visual. Let's back up. I will automatically express auditorily, and you will automatically express visually, and we may be passing each other in the night in terms of affirming each other in our sensory preference.
Mm. Want to improve your marriage? Then communicate in your mate's preferred language. After the break, Sean will be here to get us physically active, but first, the news. In the headlines today, can exercising make food less attractive, kids' attentiveness related to aerobic fitness, and the peanut butter test for Alzheimer's. Regular physical activity has been found to reduce the attraction of the brain for food. Harvard researchers presented images of high-calorie and low-calorie foods to healthy adults during brain scanning. The longer individuals had spent exercising, the lower the activation of the regions of the brain known to control appetite and respond to images of food. More exercise was also associated with a reduced preference for the unhealthy high-calorie foods. So make appetite control easier. Spend more time being active. Aerobic fitness can boost learning and memory in children, according to a study from the University of Illinois. Tests were performed on children aged 9 to 10. There were no differences between the higher fit and lower fit participants at initial learning. But following learning and retention sessions, higher fit kids outperformed lower fit kids. This was most obvious when the initial learning tasks were the most challenging. So children, if you want to be a high achiever, be sure to get fit and stay fit. Preliminary testing has found that patients in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease had a dramatic difference between the right and left nostril at detecting odor. The left nostril was impaired and could not detect the smell of peanut butter until it was 4 inches closer to the nose than what the right nostril could. This was not the case with other kinds of dementia. Peanut butter is a pure odorant and it's easy to access. Research will now begin to see if the peanut butter test could become an early predictor of Alzheimer's disease in those with mild cognitive impairment. So watch this space. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News.
The idea of the Trinity is one that most Christians believe in. In fact, it came about the 3rd or 4th century. In fact, the word Trinity comes from the Latin word Trinitas. And the idea is that you have God, but then God has three other attributes. You have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. One of the best ways that I like to explain what the Trinity is through the example of an egg. I don't know about you, but I love eating eggs, and I want to assure you that none of these eggs were ever harmed during this production, okay? I have this egg in my hand, and when you take a look at the egg, it's an egg. But if you were to crack open an egg, there's a couple elements that you're going to find. One is that there is an egg yolk. There's what you call the egg white. And then there's a shell. There's three different parts to an egg, but yet it's still an egg. And that's kind of the same idea with the idea of who God is. Even though there is just one God, there are three attributes of God. God the Father, the guy who lives up in heaven. God the Son, Jesus Christ, who came here on this earth to help people understand who God really is. And then you have God, the Holy Spirit. In fact, Jesus talks about the Holy Spirit right before he leaves from the earth and goes to heaven. And he says, don't worry, don't be worried, I'm going to send you the Comforter, also called the Holy Spirit. There's three parts to God, but there's still just one God.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Here I am, and I hope you're ready to do some moves with Sean, our trainer. What have you got for us?
All right, let's start with a little bit of a warm-up.
Yeah,
let's
I like warm-up.
Some jumping jacks before we play with the toys.
Yeah, more toys today.
There you go. Let's do 10 jumping jacks. I'm going to do, you do regular jumping jacks. I'm going to do seal jacks where the hands are here.
All right.
So we're going to go in 3, 2, and 1. Go. 1. The benefit for mine that I'm doing is just working the back just a little bit more. I lost count. All right. And
6.
There you go.
8, 9, 10.
All right. Again, preparing the body for movement. All right. Let's pick the knees up a little bit. Alternating. Chest up. What I want you to do here is turn your leg to the side just a little bit. And again, alternate. Chest up. Get the balance. Perfect. Shake it out. All right, the first exercise we're going to do is with a medicine ball. All right. Have you heard of people say, I've reached a plateau?
Yeah.
Well, we're breaking those plateaus.
Oh,
wait.
Right? Okay.
So, a plateau is when you were exercised at a certain intensity for a long period of time, and your body just says, I know what you're going to do next, and no change. It doesn't stimulate any change. All right, so instead of doing like regular
exercise. So that's why you give us a lot of variety, right?
Exactly. So the variety helps break those plateaus, right? Change up the intensity, yeah. The pace, the time. So what you're going to do is come here and kick out, all right? We're not going to add a push-up, all right? But back here, stand up. Back down. Kick out and back up here. Okay.
He's trying to make it sound good that he's not giving us the push-up, you see, that he's really kind.
Yet.
But this
yet.
Is not that kind.
Yet.
Oh, yet.
Yes. There you go.
Now he's got me worried.
All right, so come on. Let me give you, you turn to the side here. There you go. And I'll give you the cues at what to watch out for. Now, hold the ball like that.
Okay.
There you go. Nice tight grip. All right.
All right.
And make sure your shoulder is right over the ball. Right?
Okay.
Creating that 90 degree angle. And then you kick out, stabilize, and from your shoulder all the way to your ankle is nice and straight. All right, so bring your hips down just a little bit more, engage your core. All right, then you kick your legs back in, stand up.
Oh,
with the ball.
With the ball.
There you go. All right, now give me 3 more. Go ahead. Paying close attention to form. Perfect. Perfect. Give me 2 more. Kick out. Yes, 1 more. Now, we didn't add the push-up in there, but I'm going to put Dr. Narada on the spot. Just go down just a little bit and pop up, back up. Yes, there you go. Just adding a little bit more variety to that one exercise, all right? So you hold on to that.
All right.
We're going to do a lunge, but 3 different angles. A 12 o'clock, a 1:30, and a 3 o'clock, all right?
All right.
Stimulating 3 different, all right, pieces of the muscle, your quadricep, all right?
All right.
So we're going to go forward. All right, right here, 45 degree. And a lateral lunge, make sure your toes point forward. Here, okay, let's do it again on here. Again, right leg, 45 degree. Lateral, and let's do the other side. Left leg, there you go. It's a little odd, right?
It feels really strange. We might move along.
There you go,
go ahead. Yep.
Perfect. You got your 45, and then I'll do my lateral, okay? Again, working the quadricep, 3 different angles. Normally, you're used to doing a lunge going forward, but again, we're talking about breaking plateaus. Your body may not be used to going at a 45 degree or used to going at a lateral, right?
Right.
Lateral direction. All right, so 1 more time. Forward, keeping the chest up, 45 degree, and then your lateral. Pointing the toe forward, making sure this leg is nice and straight, and coming back up again. All right?
Excellent.
Shake it off. What we're going to do now, you hold on to that still.
All right.
We're going to go down to sumo squat where your toes are pointing outwards. Okay?
Okay.
So as you come out, come back in, press up. All right? Same thing you could do with the medicine ball. All right? Hold on to it. Go all the way down. Bicep curl. And press up. All right?
Okay.
All right, so perfect. Feet nice and wide. Let's go down together. All right, go down. Bicep curl and up. Great exercise to work the lower region and the upper region. All right, making sure to breathe when you get to the top. Let's do 3 more. Now, the thing about working out is you don't want to get bored with it.
Right.
So doing combination exercises like this, 1 more, is a great way to work 2 different regions of the body and maximize the time while you can.
Right.
All right? And last but not least,
and it keeps your brain engaged too, doesn't
it? There you go. Absolutely.
You have to think about what you're doing.
You do.
Keeps
you can't do the same thing over and over again. Your body just, it acclimates, and that's how you reach those plateaus. Mm. Last but not least, let's take that ball, hold here, and we're going to work the delt, all right? Everybody loves the delt, right? So we're going to come straight up. When you get to the top, I want you to blow out. Come back in and blow up. Perfect. All the way down. You could do these for about 10 to 15 reps. The deltoid muscle is a small muscle. It's your shoulder cap. So it doesn't take much for it to start burning. So you get to about 8, 9, 10, and you start going, make funny faces. All right? Give me three more. One. Two. Last one. And when you get to the top, I want you to hold it just a little bit. Keep it there. Keep it there. Hold it, hold it, hold it. Now, you know, I like, yeah. Come on, no. Come on, keep it out here. So what's happening? You know, I like to torture a little bit, right? Come on, you can do it, Come on, give me one more. All the way down.
Now you're going to talk quickly?
Yes.
Okay.
And then, but again, the deltoid is a...
Yeah, let me just whack
you a deltoid. The deltoid is a small muscle. So again, when you get to the top here, you want to be able to squeeze that shoulder. Yes, squeeze it and get the benefit. I mean, there's no point in you just working out and just doing it just to do it.
Yeah.
Do it and think about the muscle region. You're here, you're working on that V of your delt, and you're coming back down, all right? Remember, work out with a purpose. Don't just work out just to work out.
I like that.
Do it with a purpose. And let's cool down. You know, I love my favorite. Take a nice deep breath. And let's go down. Let's go forward. Great exercise to stretch out your calf. Make sure that heel is all the way down. I'll turn to the side. Make sure that heel is all the way down. If you want a deeper stretch in your calf, you can go back a little bit more, but you gotta make sure that that heel goes all the way down and stretch. Okay? And then take a nice deep breath while you're down here and walk your feet to your hands. Come nice and slow. And shake it out.
Nice. Do we get to stretch our deltoid?
You want to stretch your delt?
Yeah.
Let's go. Right arm here.
All right.
Now there's several.
He doesn't need to stretch his delt because he was just, you know, standing
I was supervising.
There.
Supervising takes a lot of energy.
Oh, supervising.
It does.
Okay.
It does. I read it in a book. All right, switch.
Whereas I work my deltoid, so, and you did too, because I know you did it right along with me.
Absolutely. I hope so. All right, shake it out. Another great exercise, you can just put this arm back here, stretch out your tricep just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And switch sides. Make sure you breathe while you're doing these exercises. The last thing you want to do is hold that in and keep, you want to blow the carbon dioxide out, relax the body.
And you relax when you're stretching.
Do. There you go. Yeah. Get the benefit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Are we ever too old to begin a physically active lifestyle? A 2009 study of 1,900 seniors would argue no. At age 70, the survival rate of those who were physically active was 2 times that of those who did not exercise. At age 85, the rate was 3 times higher. The study found that even starting physical activity very late in life was beneficial. No matter your age, a physically active life is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for me to answer some of the questions that you've texted, you've called, and you've posted on our Facebook page. Myri called and said, I have recurrent blocked sinuses that are very painful. I've had severe headaches for the last 3.5 weeks and I'm now on antibiotics. Is there anything I can do for this naturally and what can I do to prevent this? Well, let me start with the prevention and then I can talk about your treatment, Myri. To prevent it, you might need to think about increasing your body's immune system, and that just means looking after yourself well, making sure you get enough sleep and eat the right foods, get some exercise every day, and be active. So all of those good things. But also, I get sinuses if I have too much dairy. So there might be an allergy in your food, and if you do have that allergy, you want to just have those foods infrequently, if at all. Now, in terms of treatment, saline nose drops can be really helpful. Now you can take nose drops that retract the sinuses, but then you get a rebound increase in swelling
after you stop them. So if you can get away with the saline alone ones, that's better. And you can drop them into your nose lying down and then let them wash around all inside your sinuses. Your sinuses cover all of this area here and also across the top of your nose there. Another thing to do that's really helpful is a hot foot bath. Now, when we have sinusitis, we have a lot of congestion in this area of the head. So what a hot foot bath does, you think, why treat the feet? Well, this is where the problem is. It draws that congestion away from the head. And so you can put your feet in hot water, as hot as you can stand, as long as you don't have diabetes, that's okay. But keep your feet hot for 20, 30 minutes, a cooling cloth to the head, and that will help to draw the congestion out, and then finish with a cold pour. And the other thing you can do, which is really helpful, is hot and cold fomentations across the sinuses. So you can put a hot pack on or a thermophore. You can buy a thermophore that's in a strip, 17-by-4-inch thermophore, and that fits really well across there. Do the hot for 4 minutes, the cold for about 1/4 of a second, and a minute, sorry, and then 4 minutes again. Do that at least 4 times. I just use the rule of 4s. So I hope that helps. Someone else texted, I take 500 milligrams of magnesium a day, and I have done that for the last month. I've noticed that I'm forgetting more than normal. Could magnesium be the cause? It's unlikely to be the cause, but you could try halving the dose, because 500 milligrams is a moderately high dose, so halve it, see if it makes a difference. But it might be more around your sleep and your sleep pattern, because that can really impact our memories. Well, thanks for sending those questions. Please keep asking questions, because it's helpful to all the other viewers that are just like you, but they're not brave enough to perhaps ask their question. So leave your questions on our answering machine. 855-400-HEALTHY is the number. That's 855-400-4325. To text, it's 301-960-5144, or you can leave your question on the Go Healthy for Good Facebook page, either as a post or as a message if you want to keep it confidential. And I'm happy to keep your name off the message. Kale is a form of cabbage. It belongs to the brassica family, which includes broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and collard greens. Kale comes as green or purple leaves, does not tend to form a head. It's loaded with antioxidants. Beta carotene, vitamin K, vitamin C, and then lutein and zeaxanthines. It also, like the other brassicas, contains a chemical called sulforaphane. This is an anti-cancer chemical. Boiling it will reduce the levels. Steaming or stir-frying retains it. And then there's another anti-cancer compound called indole-3-carbinol, which is also found in kale. Dehydrated or baked, kale takes on the consistency of potato chips. It's a much healthier alternative though. Bon appetit. Today we're in Napa Valley, California, learning how different every brain is with Dr. Arlene Taylor. Dr. Taylor, you just mentioned a sensory perception assessment. What is that? Where do we find one of those?
There is a sensory preference assessment, we call it. I've worked very hard on it for years. It's available free on my website. If you go to my website, which is just myname.org, www.arlenetaylor.org. Mm-hmm. I tell people, if you're looking for me, forget.net, forget.com, forget.tv, I'm an org. And on my homepage, there'll be a banner at the top, and you will see sensory preference assessment. And you can click on that and print it off and take it, and there will be an explanation with it. Many people have a sense of what they like and what they're comfortable with, but the problem comes when, for example, you're the only one with your preference in your family. And perhaps you get shamed for your preference, or you don't get affirmed in your preference. And so you may kind of try to put that away and develop the skills that subconsciously you think you need to relate to these people. Mm. But it's really important to know your preference, because that's what you're going to be putting out to the world automatically, unless you make a different choice.
Can we make a different choice? Can we actually change our preference?
You can make a choice to build skills in another preference. And I work on that so that when I talk to someone who's visual, that I have some sense of how to relate to them in a way that I'm not frowning at them and I'm not looking at the ceiling or the wall when I'm talking to them. So you can build skills, but right. We don't think you ever change your preference. You know, the scripture says the leopard does not change its spots.
Hmm. Now, what about children? Tell us a little bit more about sensory perceptions and children and how that all works.
The saddest thing I think we do as parents and teachers and extended family and whoever else mm-hmm. is we tend to treat all kids the same. Mm. So you could have 3 children in your family and each one of them could have a different sensory preference. And if you don't understand this, you're not affirming them. We get affirmed fastest. We feel loved fastest when we get sensory data in our preference. And so very often we don't affirm our children in a way that they get because we don't realize how different they are. Early in my career, I was a school nurse and I was used to dealing with kids. And so I thought it'll be really fun to be a camp nurse one summer.
Mm-hmm. Turning it from an 8-hour day into a 24-hour day.
Yes.
Right, okay.
And I failed to realize at that age that I really needed the summers for a break because I'm an ambivert. And that's a lot of stimulation being around kids 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm. Nevertheless, I did it one summer. It was really good experience watching how the different children exhibited their sensory preference, and what bothered one didn't bother another. Mm. For example, first camp, first night, 250 kids,
wow.
I think 7 to 9. And somebody got the bright idea. I'm not saying it wasn't a good idea, mm-hmm. but they decided we'll just plate all the food in the kitchen, mm-hmm. set it out on all these wooden tables. Kids will just come in and sit down. The next day we'll give them, you know, the experience of going through line. Right. I hear crying. I'm auditory. I go over to this little boy, cute, freckled, red hair, head down on the table, sobbing. And I said, I'm the camp nurse, can I help you? And he said, I can't eat this food. And I looked at the plate, looked perfectly fine to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you'll need to explain to me the reason, and then maybe I can help you. He goes, well, look at it. Okay, so I know he's visual.
Right.
I'm looking. I said, what's the problem? He goes, the mashed potatoes are pink. The beets have gone and made them pink. I can't eat pink potatoes. And he's back to sobbing. So we just got him another plate with everything separated. He was happy as if he had good sense.
Hmm.
Many people would say, don't be silly, eat it. It didn't work for his brain.
No, no. So you were defying something that you couldn't defy. Well, thank you.
And we could talk about that all night. We do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Pajamas don't feel good. Just put them on and go to bed. You're fine.
Yeah.
No, it itches and scratches and they can't sleep. Or really loud music. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's too loud. It may be too loud for an auditory. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm not shouting at you, but they feel like you are.
Right.
Or there's a sarcastic tonality in your voice and they pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
And want to know what they did wrong.
Right.
By understanding why there are differences between us, it should make us more thoughtful of others and their needs. We have more from Dr. Taylor, so stick around.
There is a garden in every childhood, an enchanted place where colors are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no 7 wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. There are 7 million.
Children are 1/3 of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me."
Welcome back. Remember to leave your health question by phoning 855 400 Healthy, by texting it to 301-960-5144, or by posting it to Facebook. For those with an auditory preference, here's some useful information for you. It comes from the Center for Academic Success at Louisiana State University.
Understanding how you learn best can help you become a more efficient learner. Using study strategies based on your personal strengths can also help you make stronger connections, move more information from short-term to long-term memory, which will definitely enhance your learning process. When auditory learners hear information, they usually make connections immediately. That's why it's helpful for this type of learner to preview material such as PowerPoints, chapter summaries, notes, graphs, and homework problems before they go to the lecture. Listening to recorded lectures and discussing the information with others is also helpful. Always request permission from instructors before recording their lectures.
A wise piece of advice. Now, let's join Dr. Taylor for the last part of our discussion today. Dr. Taylor, we're talking here about visual preference, auditory, kinesthetic, but is visual preference different to visualizing or visualization? How do they sit together?
Good question. Every brain is able to do internal mental picturing, and visualization is the word for that.
Right.
Meaning, if I say to you, pull up in your mind a picture of your mother's face, you've got it. Mm. Some brains do it more easily than others. That is different from having what you take in through your eyes register most quickly and intensely in your brain. So I've worked very hard on the sensory preference assessment to remove anything that might trigger thoughts of visualizing, because we just want to try as best we can to get people to figure out what is it that triggers fastest in your brain.
Mm. So what comes in through the senses?
Not what you're processing inside your brain.
Right, they're two separate things. Now, we also talked about sensory preferences within a marriage. Let's see if we can tease this out, because I think this can be a real feast or famine for a marriage, can't it?
Oh, I think many marriages break up because they no longer feel affirmed. Because when you're dating, the brain goes into what we call whole brain nurturing. It has a goal. And regardless of its sensory preference, it's going to do everything sensorily it can to attain its goal. So it'll smile at the person and dress nicely and talk to them and, you know, take them out to dinner and touch them and on and on. And the minute you sign on the dotted line, the goal has been achieved and your brain goes back to its preference unless you make a different choice. So you marry this person because you've never been treated this well in your whole life. And then you sign on the dotted line and you go, he changed or she changed. Yeah, they did. And depending now on whether you have the same sensory preference or a different sensory preference, mm-hmm. or whether you understand this and nurture the other person every day in their preference, it can be sort of a deal breaker. Mm. So this very visual male marries this really cute little svelte woman, but she happens to be kinesthetic. And now she starts cooking wonderful food for him and eats as much as he does. And she's gained 30 pounds at the end of the first year, because kinesthetics are often gourmet cooks and they love food. And if it's good, they eat. And women can never eat as much as men if they want to maintain their weight. So mm-hmm. a year later, she is, you know, up 5 dress sizes. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at her and going, this isn't the woman I married.
She changed.
She looks really different. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, if he really loved her, it wouldn't matter. Hello. Mm. Yes, you can choose to still love her. Mm. But if you're visual and you married her for how she looked and she no longer looks like that, you are getting different visual cues.
Hmm. Hmm. I'm thinking in terms of even ourselves, if we're visual and we're used to that body shape, can that be really difficult when, say, a woman gets pregnant and she's used to being curvy and slim and slender? Can that be really challenging for a visual person?
I think it would be dependent totally on how functionally healthy the individual is. Yes, her body's changing, but it could be visually wonderful to watch it change, because look what you're going to get with this. Mm.
So it's the attitude. Can that also work within marriage then, as we age and we change physically?
Well, I think so. You know, I joke about, you know, how I look now compared to how I did in the late 1800s when I was a girl. And, you know, I talk about I have everything I had then. It's just none of it's in the same place. And that's fine, because that's the process. Mm. But you're still the same person. I work hard maintaining my weight, dress as well as I can for the changes in my body. Yes. And I'm enjoying the journey.
Mm. That is the way to see it, isn't it? But I love the way that you've talked about how couples can really learn about each other and try to continue nurturing, at least in the preference of their spouse, to make that marriage
just success. One thing at least every day.
One thing every day. Well, I think all our viewers can try and achieve that. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
Did you work out your own sensory preference? Chances are those closest to you do not share your sensory preference. So did you figure out theirs as well? Practice nurturing them in their own preference. Just one thing each day, they'll begin to feel much more understood, better supported and loved. Try it. It'll be worth the effort. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time when we discuss more about the brain.